Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website at kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. KPTZ has continued to broadcast through the first 2 years of the pandemic, and we will continue to broadcast no matter what variant they throw at us next. We've already seen a lot of curves from COVID, Delta, Omicron, etc., etc. This show, Our Town, has stayed on course throughout the pandemic. The show has a pretty simple mission. We want to introduce our listeners to some of the fascinating people who make up our community. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet new people, even if you've been confined to quarters for a very long time. Of course, the way we put the show together has pivoted to try to outrun or out-evade the virus. At one point, I interviewed everyone remotely and never even met my guests in person. That's fairly unsatisfactory for everyone. Let's call it adequate, not great. Now I'm finally able to invite fully vaccinated guests into our studio in our world headquarters in that sweet little trailer in the parking lot of Mountain View School. That's much better. You probably haven't considered this, but when we record a show, it's not the first time I meet my guests. I set up a meeting with the interviewees a couple of days before our recording session. There was a point where all of that was done remotely, but now we are cautiously meeting in person, generally outside, masked up, of course. Shivering through an interview on a windy Port Townsend day gives you a candid view of someone's story. My next guest was up for just such an in-person interview. The other day we met and sat outside on cold, uncomfortable metal chairs outside of Better Living Through Coffee. By the way, have you noticed there's one side benefit of wearing a mask? They actually help keep your face warm. My next guest is a musician. After decades of performances, busking, and performing at festivals and concerts, he's quite used to outside venues. My guest today is Artis Spoonman, a man whose name literally tells you what he's all about. Artis plays the spoons, yes, the spoons, as in knife, fork, and spoon. So welcome to the show, Artis.
Why, thank you. I have to comment. Your honesty is absolutely impeccable, and I really appreciate that. The idea of telling the people about our meeting the other day, spectacular. And my last name is not Spoonman. It's actually Artis the Spoonman.
Oh, important.
No, I know, you got that off of a wiki or one of the, or maybe someplace.
Well, now you told me that you legally changed your name.
Well, I did. I didn't. It's not like changing. I dropped my stepfather's names and kept the first name. His first name is Artis. I was named after my stepfather.
Well, I usually like to start with people's story back at the beginning, literally. Yeah, yeah. Like, were you born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
Negative. I was born in Kodiak, and I was my mom left my father when I was 5 months old, and we came up what they refer to as outside to Seattle, which she was familiar, and been here since 1949, here being Seattle, and I stayed in the northwest here along the south.
Okay, well, I'm always interested in people's teenage years. Yeah. It's a very formative time. And
no
so
doubt.
Let's talk just a little bit about your teenage years, like when you were in high school.
Yeah.
What were you like? Were you a jock, a nerd, a band geek? What were you like?
That is a good question. I was an outlaw, and I was not very well liked, I don't think. I guess I was a screwball. I didn't stay in high school. I had to get out of there. And, shortly thereafter, I joined the Navy. But high school, my favorite class was, of course, choir. And I liked math, but the teacher was unacceptable.
I had some of those, too.
Truly.
Well, so you told me the other day that you left after 10th grade.
Yes.
And you went
not to, after.
Oh, within. During. Okay. Well, so you also mentioned that you joined the Navy, but most people in 10th grade aren't quite old enough to join the Navy.
Well, I kept trying at being there. I didn't, you know, I went three semesters I tried to stay in the 10th grade, but I got fed up. And so the year that I left, quit school, I was 16. And so at the end of that year, in October, I turned 17. And on my 17th birthday, I came home drunk or hungover or drunk. And Mom turned around and called the cops. Cops came. They took me to, I was 17, it was Everett. They took me to jail. They gave me a room. They woke me up. A matron woke me up. Took me downstairs. I had a visitor. Took me downstairs, and there was the recruiting officer from the Navy, who I'd already passed test twice while I was 16, too young. They enlisted me from jail.
Okay.
On my 17th birthday, you couldn't go in earlier. Hungover. That is absolutely unacceptable from that point of view. Unacceptable. Pardon me. I get emotional, but that's why one of the two reasons why I am now a vet. I mean, rather, I have veteran, you know, I get VA benefits because.
Well, so where did you go while you were in the Navy?
Went to, I was stationed in Norfolk and deployed to Sicily and Spain. I went to a few other places, and actually, I went to Tripoli one day. That was interesting. That's a lot of information comes to my mind about that.
Yeah, it must have been pretty interesting to see the world a
it
bit.
It was, oh yeah, well, I've done a lot more since
yes,
then.
Yes.
The Spoon Man has taken me to 30 countries, all paid for. I never paid to go to any place, and I've been both sides of the equator and both sides of the dateline, and I've been very fortunate.
So when did you take up the spoons?
Mom bought myself and my sister a pair of musical spoons. They were in a package in Seattle when I was about 10 at a local Five and Dime. And, you know, the package said run them down your fingers, so I did that. And between my hand and leg and played along with my Elvis collection and a lot of other music, you know. And so whenever I wanted to do something unusual, since I couldn't play other instruments, I played spoons.
And it sounds like you more or less taught yourself.
Well, I don't believe in teaching oneself. I mean, I believe in learning as oneself, but you learn from your environment and your other influences. So, no, I can't say I taught myself. I learned from, like I said, that package, and then I also learned from people saying, hey, do this and do that, and hey, why don't you do that? No, go ahead and try it. You know, and,
well, to be honest, until I met you, I had never met anyone who played the spoons.
Oh, good for you. I wish I could say that. You know, they're all over the world. Spoon playing started, as I understand from somebody else's research, in Georgia, Armenia, Turkey area, and then went throughout the world from there. They play in Cambodia, I know, and they came west and went up into the north, into the islands, and then across the ocean, and probably only as far as the Appalachians first.
But you told me that you had really good experience in Quebec City.
Absolutely. The only place, and I've been some places, I don't know how many cities, and like I said, 30 countries. They play in Ireland, they play in England, but the finest player I ever saw was in Quebec, and there's somebody out there online selling spoons. He's got thousands of wooden spoons he makes. He's in Quebec. Yeah, Quebec was, the one person for sure I saw was, and he was impressive.
Yeah. So I know you've performed all over the world, but how did your career unfold? I mean, how did people hear about you? How did you get invited to concerts or festivals or whatever?
Oh, it's always been that way, too. I mean, I don't apply to anybody. I played in a tavern in Fremont, Seattle, and I became very famous there, I mean, locally. And, you know, and then I headed out. I didn't have anything to offer anybody. That's my trade. So I played at a couple of festivals. I sat in with people at festivals, and then I was busking down in Westwood near UCLA, and somebody asked me if I'd play their college, university coffee house, and it just so happened it was in Riverside, California, and my sister lived there. That's where I was visiting. So the name of the place was The Barn, and I got up on stage, and the very first thing I said to them was, well, I got to tell you, this is the first paid gig I ever had, and it went well, of course, and I just, you know, what you say about, I just played, and from all my playing, it is, I cannot in any short phrase explain what an incredibly charmed life the Spoon Man of me has had. Absolutely. I don't apply to gigs. Only thing I ever pursued was Frank Zappa, and by cracky, after some time, and, you know, trying to contact him and telling him too that, you know, I was sympathetic about his cancer. Eventually his wife called me and I got to record with him and hang with him in his UMRK studio in the basement for about 4 hours.
Wow, Frank Zappa, there's a name.
I'll say, kudos and genuflect, man. Honestly, he's, he and Jim Page are the major influences in my life, and I didn't say Jimmy. I mean, Jim Page is a Seattle troubadour, a very, very influential man, very prolific writer. Jim Page, yeah. You want to look him up, Seattle Jim Page, out there on wherever you look.
You know, you gave me a video where it highlighted some of your performances, and I was really struck by the range. Mm-hmm. I mean, one part of it, you're talking to little kids. You're teaching some little kids how to play the spoons or demonstrating things, and then various clubs and outdoor festivals. And then there's one segment, and I don't know where it is, but it's obviously a symphony, an orchestra, and you were wearing white tails and bare feet.
Yeah.
Where was that?
That was in Seattle, the Seattle Philharmonic. It was spectacular. That white tux with silk. I was to the T's. I was definitely dressed up by that.
Yes.
You know, even barefoot. I play barefoot, and shoes set me off balance, so I play barefoot. But
interesting.
It's not only my hippie influence, and I am certainly hippie. Qualified. My mother was a flapper. She was a diamond dance gal at the Red Dog Saloon. She flew in Alaska in the 30s. Yeah, she was a riveter. She worked at Boeing during the war.
Really?
Yeah. So I've got heritage in the hippie world, you bet. Don't think she ever married my dad. That was good. Yeah. She was something.
So did you basically call Seattle home through the years? Was that your central point?
I used to refer to that as home, and a hometown it is. And but, you know, I live in Port Townsend.
How did that happen? How'd you end up in Port Townsend?
Well, I came up here quite a bit in the 70s performing, and then I had an in-law here, you know, and then there were events that Jim and I would come to, and then, like the Wooden Boat Festival. And then I came up here with some drummer, you know, brothers from Seattle, Sundance Rhythm Band, and we'd come up, they'd play the Town Tavern, and I'd sit in with them, and that was my biggest memory. And
well, the Town Tavern still strikes a chord with many people in this town.
Yeah.
Did you actually live there with some of the...
No.
No?
No, I would be just in and out of town to play there, but I never moved here until 91, and then I took a 7-year break, and I came back in 08 and been here ever since. But the town, my goodness, huh? You talk about romance. What a romantic memory. On the ferry dock and at the ferry dock and great cafe behind it and hotel upstairs where they booked the, players when they, gosh, what a place. Yeah.
A lot of good memories, I
take it. I'll say, you know, yeah. and not just my memories, but culturally. You know, I mean, who did you walk up to that didn't know the town and hadn't been in there and didn't necessarily get drunk? I mean, not the daytime, even the daytime peeps, man, you know, everybody needs a hideaway, and this was really, you could disappear in there easily, even if you were the only one. Yeah, it is a very good place.
Looking back over the years and some of your performances, what do you see as the highlights? What are your fondest memories? I mean, obviously Frank Zappa was one of them.
Absolutely. So is Soundgarden. You know, Soundgarden, what they did for me. I mean, I was already world famous. I'd been to Australia and Southeast Asia, Japan a few times, England. Performed on the Letterman Show and a few others. And, you know, what they did is they just, it was like a crown. They just set me up on a pedestal for the world to see. What a, Chris Cornell, what a wonderful man. And I don't mean just about me, and I meant that in his own personal compliment. He was a writer, a hell of a singer. Well, yeah. That was a highlight, no doubt. Jim Page. Working with Jim Page is more than a highlight. It was like food. It was like a vehicle. The inspiration that man gave me, no doubt.
In addition to playing the spoons, you also have written some music.
I have, sure. I'm not as prolific as many, but I've written some stuff, sure. I've written quite a bit. You know, yeah. You know, and they come to me. I don't usually spend much time on them either. Sometimes the song I write is about as long as it took me to sing it. I feel like good about that, you know. Even the tunes that come along with the
creativity.
Words. I do. I haven't done that in a while. I haven't written anything for quite a while. I haven't played for quite a while. I keep saying, you know, I haven't played 15 minutes 10 to 20 times in 3 years, 15 minutes at a time. And I'd pick some up today, and I wouldn't play them in public now. I mean, not without a lot of playing ahead of time, you know?
Yeah. Well, I read somewhere that in order to be good at something, whether it's basketball or music or whatever, you have to not rehearse, but you have to experience 10,000 hours of it.
You bet.
To be decent.
You bet. No
and
doubt.
That sort of stuck in my head as a number, 10,000
yeah,
hours.
Good.
That's a long, long time.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. You know, do the math. That's a lot. Yeah, I've done that. I'm sure I've done that. 50 years. Divide 10,000 by 50. What do you got? 200. Oh, yeah. 200 days. I used to do 200 days a year. I don't know if that's a correct bit of division, but I did. I used to play 300 days a year.
So you told me that being a musician was great for your love life.
I told you that?
You did.
Oh, where were we even? You know. With all respect and due respect, and, you know, I mean, it was, you know, I think of it sometimes as abusive, some people do, but my mother, she got around too. Nothing like me, I'm sure, but I never forced my way home with anyone. I mean, mostly I didn't even, you know, attempt to seduce anyone. They, you know, I would play in the bars a lot, and next thing you know, somebody was either coming home with me, or I don't mean to say that, somebody, I mean, you know, a wonderful friend and a woman, and, you know, I...
And along the way, you had a daughter.
I did. Roberta, you know, and that was, her mother is my second lover after, I mean, talk about abuse, I mean, you know, not a month after I was with my first lover, I wound up just leaving her, and then fell in love with Patty, and we had Roberta in 1970, so she would be 52. We lost her 17 years ago.
I'm so sorry.
To a worse disease than this COVID. Lost it to necrotizing fasciitis. It's the disease that people call the flesh-eating bacteria.
That's horrible. I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It's, I know.
You've had a really unusual career.
I have. It's quality novel. Unbelievable. You know, I've done what I damn well please all my life. All my life.
That's amazing.
I walked from jobs that were, you know, where the boss was a sexist or an abuser of some nature, and I just walk. And besides, I always had to be outside on the... I have two childhood desires, to be a musician and to travel, and haven't I done that?
You certainly have.
I really have. I hitchhiked from Seattle to South Carolina and back barefoot.
What time of year?
I turned 20 years old. It was September. It was cold on the way back. It was hot on the way out. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I remember, had to run across the street and throw my jacket down to jump on it in, like, Los Angeles only. And then I think it was maybe east of Los Angeles. And then on the way back, I had to wrap that same jacket around my feet, standing out in outside of Memphis in the rain. Ah, show the excitement.
It's a good thing you were young and strong.
Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah, comparatively, I'd say that.
Hitchhiking is, I think, a fading art. I don't think as many people hitchhike as they once did.
I reckon you're probably right in this country, but then righteously so, this country is mean. This country, the men are not, overall, they're not nice. They're bullies. There's a lot of bully men out there. I don't even want to think about what I've often said. If a woman is hitchhiking, you need a companion, even if it's another woman, or you need a piece.
Yeah.
You need some sort of weapon you're familiar with.
Yeah, well, as a woman, I certainly wouldn't hitchhike.
No. Well, I've known some who have, and bless their hearts, they're fabulous. No doubt. You know. But it's just not a country to do that in.
So now that you live in Port Townsend, tell me, what do you like about the place and what do you not so much like?
Oh, where am I going to go first? I mean, like, I'm here because I like it. You know, I mean, I like the rain and I like green and I like no freezing and no extra heat. I mean, I like it. But the people, this place is white. I'm sick of it. This is a gentrified place. It's booming in population, and it's booming. It's dropping to the right, you know. And it's not like never mind, I go out politically, but yeah, right now, the tourism trade, and bless their hearts, I've got very good friends who make money on the tourists, and righteously so, probably cracky. The way I see it is that my brethren came in here a couple of hundred years ago and literally wiped out my other brethren, ancient brethren, and killed them. Whereas tourists come in here and they mess up the economy and they crowd the streets and they mess up the culture, but they aren't killing us. So
well,
I have to live with the tears.
There is that. Okay. Well, artists, we're almost out of time here.
Oh.
Is there any area that you'd like to expound on a little bit? You told me that you achieved your childhood dreams of being in music and traveling. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing if you think about it, how far you have gone.
It is. What I would say to I suppose, is I have product. You can find me out there online and buy it directly from me.
Okay. In fact, we should mention that if people are listening to the show and they'd really like to experience your music, where would they go?
Just find me online and contact me. artist@spoonman.net. Easy enough. But there is, you know, think from the inside. The outside is just the outside. The outside world, really, it's just the outside world. Deal with it inside. I have to tell myself that all the time. And I get angry, and I get anxious, and I get depressed. And when I've got a hold of it, I realize that's my mind. I don't have to be that way about everything that's outside or anything that's outside. True. I have to protect myself from violence or what have you, but I still have to do it from inside me.
This is true. Okay. We are just now running close on time. I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, you are so bold.
You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Artis the Spoon Man.
Hi.
A legendary performer. If you'd like to listen to him play the spoons or see some of his performances, you can look him up online. YouTube has some amazing footage of him in action, and it is amazing the amount of energy and what this man can do with a common spoon. Just blow your mind.
25 years ago. 30 years ago.
I also want to thank Taylor Clark, the editor.
Hi, Taylor. Thank you.
Editor and producer of Our Town.
Yeah, well, don't forget Sage.
Yes, and Sage's dog. Many of you don't realize how important the role of an editor is on a show like this. He'll edit out our mumbles and ums and ers and making us sound eloquent and smooth. I also want to thank you, the listener. Thank you for sticking with KPTZ through the troubled times. We're limping through this pandemic together. Hopefully, we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. So keep listening to KPTZ. We're a community radio station by and for the people of Jefferson County. Everyone who works here is a volunteer. We give our time because we believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. KPTZ also needs more volunteers so we can make the station even better. We also need more donations to stay afloat. We hope to move to new headquarters at Fort Worden in the near future, but we will dearly miss our current headquarters in the trailer in the parking lot of Mountain View School. So listeners, stay safe and healthy. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. I'm signing off for today. Please keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Peace out.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Taylor Clark.